Hello again, and welcome to the Game Nuts Podcast, episode 14. This is Boder.
Sticky here.
And Fear the Claw, a little less stuffed up than last week.
First off, a sort of shout-out to listener Chris, who wanted to remind us when we were talking about ODST, I think we were saying, like, sequel or what it's sort of called. Yeah. Called it a midquel. That works. Thanks, Chris.
Midquel. That makes sense.
It takes place sort of during Halo 2, I think.
So. I think interquel is also...
Interquel sounds cool.
Yes, yeah. It's fun to say. I think that's also an appropriate term.
It's like Dayquil. It's fun to say, too.
Man, I can use some of that right now.
Fun to be on. Alright.
I think that's Nightfall, by the way.
Well,
yeah.
Alright, Sticky, you go ahead and take a topic.
The difference is, like, Nightfall and Dayquil.
No, I'll slap you if you take that out. Alright,
so
he's referring to my phone, for those of you.
Oh, Christ. Sticky, give me a topic.
I don't know. Why don't we talk about, like, Crysis on my computer, which I play.
This kid who just built a computer.
Yeah, I just built a computer, so I downloaded Crysis,
And by that, you mean the Crysis demo, correct?
No, by that I mean I have a friend with Steam who downloaded it, and I played, like... played, like, the first two missions, I was actually more caring about how the graphics looked and how well they ran.
Okay.
So I set funny. It's low gamer. Those are like the graphics levels.
Nice.
So we set everything to enthusiast. Played it on a big 19-inch HD monitor, and I was running everything on the highest levels at about 40 frames per second, 30 to 40.
Not too bad at all.
It only took, what, 4 or 5 years for computers to
catch up?
Yeah.
That's ridiculous. I mean, is that sort of a testament to the game designer, or is that stupid game designer? Why don't you make things for the computers that are actually here when you
It's a testament to how beautiful the game really looks. Like, all the physics in it, like, the way everything's rendered, there's no, like, gray backgrounds or like mountains like painted into the sky, you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
Everything is actual geometry, and it's really, really pretty.
So is the game fun?
Oh, the game's great, actually.
Okay, so that makes it worth it.
Yeah. It's got some cool power-ups. Like, you've got this suit, so you can either change it to, like, he's always like max speed or max power. Mm-hmm. And so max speed, you run fast. Max power, you throw things really, really far, including people. You can jump wicked high. There's an armor one and a cloaking thing. Like I said, I only played through the first two missions, but the scale of the actual, like, environments is outlandish. It's really just incredible. And I'm so happy that my PC can actually finally handle it.
Enough about a game that's a few years old. How about one that came out this past week? A game came out called Rush Race Rally Racer. It's notable because Rush Race Rally Racer. It's notable because it came out on the Sega Dreamcast.
Another one of those.
Ten years after the Dreamcast came out,
they
got another game.
I like how they put race in there twice.
Yeah. It's like, how late 90s can we be with this title?
Yeah. Well, they
success.
Yeah, success is understatement.
Sega systems seem to be notorious for getting those, you know, games late after the life cycle. I've seen games come out for Dreamcast, Saturn, Genesis, years after they're gone. I wonder if does Sega still license them? Or?
No, it's definitely third parties. It can't be Sega licensing them.
Sega could, somebody could say, hey, we want to make a game for your Dreamcast. Sega says, sure.
At this point,
I'm sure they're very loose about it. It's like, oh yeah, you know, throw a couple bucks our way, and I'm sure you already know how to develop on the thing, because it's been out for 10 years, and it's been hacked 15 million times.
Yeah.
But, you know, just do us a favor, throw us a couple bucks. Okay, yeah, sure. And we'll help you market it, and by that will mean we'll post it on blog sites.
Yeah, exactly.
So, speaking of Sega and the Dreamcast anniversary and old stuff, I found out that there's a new Sonic game coming out, and before the world does a collective shudder of fear...
Too late.
It's going to be a 2D side-scroll platformer, like the classic. It's going to be in HD.
Yeah.
It's supposed to come out next year. And provided they don't F it up like they have the past 15... 18,000 Sonic games, it should be pretty cool. I mean, I grew up on the Super Nintendo, but I still kind of have a soft spot for the classic Sonic games.
Which Sonic game was it that just came out, like, it was, like, the last one that came out, not the Dark Knight, the one before that where it had the night and day system with the Warehog?
Sonic Unleashed?
Sonic Unleashed,
we
yeah.
do not speak of Sonic Unleashed.
Did you play it? Because the day parts weren't that bad. I mean, they were kind of fun at first.
That seems to be the trend with Sonic games where, oh, this part of the game isn't that bad. It's really good. It's really classic. But then there's this other half or more of the game that should not be in a Sonic game.
That just completely overshadows any goodness.
Well, when they're like, hey, we have Sonic, let's give it a gimmick so we can make another game, and the gimmick ends up sucking. We just want core Sonic.
Yeah, like Sonic Heroes. Sonic Heroes was a great 3D rendition of a classic Sonic game, except when you had to play it as characters other than Sonic, Tails, and Knuckles.
Yeah.
Then it just became crap.
Yeah.
Let's see here, as long as we mentioned Unleashed, I've been playing The Force Unleashed because I got my 360 back.
Oh, right.
And I took it out of the box on September 8th and looked at it, and it had an August 31st manufacture date. So...
Oh, so they sent
they,
you
they,
like
they sent me a brand new system. They looked at mine, said E74, yep, chuck it, and they gave me a brand new system, Jasper board. I'm very happy.
Yeah.
So to celebrate, I started playing Force Unleashed again for the first time since last year and realized why I stopped playing it.
Yeah, I was like, that's your celebration? Really?
Force Unleashed annoys me from a Star Wars perspective because so much stuff is able to block Force powers and lightsabers, and from a gameplay perspective because it just feels... a bad job of balancing gameplay. Too many loading screens.
Yeah.
And when you get hit, you just stand there waiting for a combo instead of being able to dodge away from it.
True.
I haven't played the game other than the demo of it that was on Xbox
Live. The demo is like the first level, and that's the most fun because, you know, it's the least limiting. It doesn't have any real limiting, enemies.
Yeah.
So, just keep playing the demo, like, 15 times, and you're good.
Since you know quite a bit more about Star Wars than I do, does it seem like the main character of that game is a little bit abusive of the Force?
Is he,
like, overly powerful than, like, anybody else in the universe?
He could, like, destroy any of the characters in the original trilogy without a second thought. And then, here they go. He goes to this backwater world in, like, the third mission, and these natives are able to block his lightsaber with their primitive weapons, and they're able to, you know, so many enemies are able to just stand there when you try to force push them with something that can break open a locked bulkhead door.
Yeah.
So. The game didn't do a very good job balancing. It's basically, the game concept was, okay, how much can we be overpowered with the Force? And then as they start developing, they're like, man, we gotta balance this? Oh my god!
Yeah, it seems like an illogical, but then again, you know, a lot of people had the same argument about the Star Wars characters in Soul Calibur 4. Well, a lightsaber would be able to cut through metal. It's fantasy. Just let it go.
Yeah, that's a fantasy one I'd be fine with.
But the one thing about Soul Calibur compared to that is that the Soul Calibur characters aren't from the Star Wars universe, so they can have their own, like, laws applied to it.
We're not going to do this.
Pretty much, cameos don't have their own universe rules, they go by Soul Calibur rules.
That's
how Soul Calibur cameos work.
By the way, I just want to share this idea with another Star Wars nut. A Star Wars fighting game running on the Soul Calibur engine
would be fun. It would have a limited range of characters.
Yeah.
Because if it's a Star Wars fighting game, you could only do Jedi versus Jedi. You wouldn't be able to do Jedi versus Han Solo because they'd screw him up.
Well, yeah, because he doesn't have a melee weapon.
Force.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, you're gonna shoot me? Force choke.
You know, you can bend the rules a little bit for the sake of fun, but...
The way the Soul Calibur does it is that you can only use Force moves so much. There's a gauge, so, like, every time you choke somebody, it takes, like, a quarter away, so...
Yeah.
That's the one balancing side there. But Yoda is so ridiculously overpowered in Soul Calibur. He breaks it.
The other thing that I've been playing was actually something right after we finished the podcast last week. We found this game for the PS2 that needs a drum controller. Let's see if this thing works. And it works with a regular PS2 controller. It's called Taiko Drum Master, and it's ridiculous. Not because it's a great game, but because it seems like this little game for, like, 5-year-olds, and yet here we are, median age, what, 23?
Yeah.
24? Like, 27. Okay, well, median age, 23. And we set up this game, and we're playing it for...
24, because the median is the number that's in the middle.
Well, when there's three of us, I think we're talking about the person in the middle.
Yeah, so it's the middle one of that data set. Average is what would be like 24.
Yeah.
Anyway, enough of the math geekery. And yet here we were for like half an hour playing the stupid thing.
Yeah.
I picked it up and like played it with, you know, friends back at the apartment and played it with my girlfriend, and it's ridiculous. Tycho Drum Master, just look it up on YouTube, because like the guys that go nuts on the arcade machines for it are really great to watch.
The set list on it is so like, it's so wide spectrum and so weird.
Good. I mean, like, you know, I started off with Tub Thumping, and the last one I played was William Tell Overture.
Yeah.
You unlock, like, Ridge Racer. I forget if it was unlocked from the beginning, but like Katamari Damacy theme.
Wasn't Devil May Cry theme, or was
no,
it?
That
there's
wasn't
another
there.
One. Oh, just, Soul Calibur theme. One of the...
I just said that, didn't I?
No.
You said
I thought I did.
Katamari.
Oh, I thought I said Soul Calibur before that.
No.
Anyway.
Just so everybody knows who are maybe new to this podcast, I usually record this podcast on about 4 hours of sleep max. So, yeah, if I derail conversation, it's because my brain is not operating at top performance.
It's fine if it derails, because we actually have a ton of stuff to talk about.
Yeah.
So, that's enough of that. Why don't you give us one?
Well, we're going to end up talking about this eventually, so I figure I may as well bring it up. Earlier this week, actually, I think it was in the past couple of days, Courtney Love sued... Well, let's get a little backstory here.
No, you already started it. Courtney Love is
suing Activision
over the appearance of Kurt Cobain in Guitar Hero 5.
Like, if anybody played Guitar Hero 5 or World Tour, you know that certain frontmen will appear as the lead singer when you play their songs.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess,
other people's songs, too.
Yes, and that's the issue she has with it.
Is that Kurt Cobain can be unlocked as a fully playable character, can play whatever, you know, can play drums on this song if you want him to.
Yeah.
Kurt Cobain could be singing the Go-Go's for, you know?
I very much doubt she has a legal leg to stand on, because
she did sign off on it.
She signed off on it, and I very much doubt that the contract had something that said that he would only sing songs that he was involved with in real life. Otherwise, Activision may be stupid enough not to be able to pick what games are good,
but
they're not stupid enough to get in legal trouble like
they
that.
They do not overlook legal issues.
Yeah.
That's one of the last things they would do. Yeah, they're... And she hasn't actually formally sued them. She more like Twitter sued them.
Yeah, she posted 240 tweets in 6 hours bitching about Activision. And actually, no, there was a statement from her lawyer.
Oh, was there?
Yeah.
Oh,
she is going to try to sue them, and I'm pretty sure it's just going to be laughed out because, you know, legally she has no leg to stand on. She signed the thing.
Yeah.
Now, the issue is, morally, who is in the right here? Is Activision in the right doing what they did, or is Courtney Love, whacked out as she is, in the right saying that, no, you shouldn't be doing this to Kurt Cobain?
I'm saying,
claw first and then sticky.
Yeah, I'm saying, you know, Activision is in the right. If you say, well, Kurt Cobain as a game avatar cannot sing any songs other than Kurt Cobain's song, then you're taking the fun out of it, you're idolizing him, you're turning him into... He's not a god, he was a guy who did some music. You know,
he is not the Messiah.
Yeah, the people who like Kurt Cobain play as Kurt Cobain, and the rest of us can just be glad that he's gone.
I don't know if I'm quite glad that he's gone, but yeah, Activision is definitely, definitely in the right here. Courtney Love is just retarded and probably was so messed up.
Sure she was stoned when she signed the thing.
Yeah,
no, this is just a life lesson. How about being sober for once, not being affected by any substances when you look at legal contracts?
Well, that she wasn't. Supposedly she's clean, but that doesn't mean she's smart.
Yeah.
Shay.
And there's probably like you know, after effects from the years of the years past.
Oh God, look at Ozzy.
Yeah.
He doesn't know where he is half the time.
I know.
Yeah.
Do you think Ozzy World of Warcraft? He did the commercial. I was just real quick. Do you think?
I wouldn't be surprised either way.
Activision is definitely right. He should be able to sing whatever, or you should be able to put him in whatever song you want.
Because it's really only going to be fans of him that use him like that. And,
you
know, fans are going to enjoy doing that.
Yeah.
And, you know,
it's not degrading to him at all. These are other great
I don't think
musicians.
So either. I mean, it might be a little weird to have him singing you know, a song in a, like a, by Bon Jovi or something. Yeah, it's going to be weird. But really, only fans of Kurt Cobain are going to be using him as a character. And if you take that out...
I'm sorry, I just got an image of Kurt Cobain singing You Give Love a Bad Name and couldn't help but laugh.
Yeah, but we're not, like, laughing at it. It's like...
Oh, this I'm is laughing
an
in- at
well,
it.
This, no, it's an enjoyable image, though. Yeah. It's...
you know, let's be let's be honest. Kurt Cobain would have hated the idea of being in the video game, regardless. So
probably. Yeah.
Let's just say.
Well, the other thing I want to point out is to contrast it with the other game that came out recently that has dead artists in it, which is Beatles Rock Band. Beatles Rock Band presents itself as, you know, a very realistic game. That, you know, it's almost like a documentary that chronicles the rise of the band, their changing music, their changing fan base, everything. Guitar Hero 5 is not. You play songs, it's a very light atmosphere. I'm very surprised that they have actual musicians in with their, you know, usual stable of characters, which are very cartoony, as well as, you know, Xbox avatars.
Am I the only one that just hates those, like, character models? Like, why can't
I'm not
they
a fan at all.
You know, in the first Guitar Hero, it was something
at the first Guitar Hero, it worked because it was PS2.
And that, and also, that's what you kept, like, when Guitar Hero first came out, it was supposed to be playing itself off as, like, not serious, pretend you're the rock star, so everything was over, you know, exaggerated.
And to me, that's what Guitar Hero should be. That's why the inclusion of the real musicians throws me off so much.
Yeah, that seems like something better fitted for a Rock Band, which already goes for the more realistic aesthetic.
Yeah. So, but, I mean, it has the make-your-own characters instead of that, so I think it's a nice move on Activision's part to put, you know, music heroes into Guitar Hero, but it's to get upset over it when the game was based on this over-the-top sort of aesthetic anyway, I think is senseless.
Well, what gets me about the character designs is, like, I haven't seen... I've seen a video of Kurt Cobain, and I have World Tour, so I've seen Ozzy Osbourne and, you know, a few of the others, but what gets me is that... In the past couple of games, they've depicted them pretty realistically.
Yeah.
Which, is, like you said, is jarring, especially when you consider Guitar Hero Aerosmith. The characters were all caricatured to look like Guitar Hero.
Yeah, and that's what they should have done, actually. If they were going to have, you know, Hendrix, Cash, Kurt Cobain in these, they should have done caricature.
And Aerosmith, they tried to caricature his lips, and they still came out too small.
And then they so they're like, we got to scale this back.
Yeah.
So, that's that. Actually, before we continue on too much, I want to mention, well, first off, I'm not going to be here next week, and the next 2 weeks the podcast is going to come out Sunday night, because that's when I'll first be able to get around to editing.
Yep.
Next week I'm going to be gone, so it's just going to be Sticky and Claw, and I'll edit it Sunday
night. I'm actually going to be gone the week after.
Oh, okay, so the week after there will be no podcast. However, the week...
Because I'm locked out.
The week after, Friday, September 25th to Saturday, September 27th, is the SUNY Tech Gamers Club Frag Fest, LAN party.
Oh, yeah.
So if you're at all interested in LAN parties, go to, I believe it's gamers.sunyit.edu. Go ahead and look up the stuff on Frag Fest. There's Unreal Tournament 2K4. Street Fighter 4 tournament, a couple other tournaments. Look into that. It's always fun times. So I'm gonna be there when I get out of work. You know, stop by and say you heard me, and I'll feel happy.
I would so much rather be doing what you're doing. I have to go to a wedding, which my girlfriend likes to refer to this wedding as a circus because my family is so ridiculous. And so this wedding is just gonna be just so over the top and drama and. God, would I like to be doing a LAN party instead. Please take me with you.
Well, you mentioned...
Well, what are you done? Because I'm not getting out of here until 8. I have to... I'm actually working, which is why I'm not going to be bringing my computer, but I'm still going to go there for events like the Computer Smash on Saturday night, which I got to see if we have any consoles here that we could go. I see a broken Xbox that could go.
Yeah.
We smashed like 40-something consoles last year. It was glorious. And the Balls Relay, which is the energy drink Balls... You chug a bottle of that, you spin around 5 times, do a circuit around the top track lap of the gym, which is where we take over the gym for the weekend, then chug another bottle and run into the wall. And it's great and sickening, and I won a 32-gig flash drive last year, so I'm going to be defending my title.
A 32-gig flash drive?
Mm-hmm.
Really?
It's great.
Wow.
So games!
That's ridiculous.
So games! How about talking a little bit about Okami then, that got an actual trailer? It's so cute. It's like no, like carrot dot carrot. It's really cute, and I really cannot wait for that game to come out.
I have not, as I think I mentioned this last week, I have not played Okami, but I've always wanted to, and this might be the game to get
this
me
is,
into
this is
it.
The game yeah. to really, I mean, I never finished Okami, my girlfriend has it on the PS2, I never finished it, I'm probably just going to get Okami done and do that.
Yeah, I never finished it either, but the little bit that I did play was a lot of fun, and I do like the strange art style of it.
Mm-hmm.
And I, when I was playing it on the PS2, I was saying to myself, I'm like, wow, this game would have been awesome on the DS. It's made for that.
Yeah.
What, you want to draw on the screen? Let's use a PS2 controller, not a DS touchscreen.
Well, it came out before the DS did.
Did it?
It's, really? Because I thought it was
it's oldish.
I thought it was like right at the same time.
Yeah, because the DS had been out for...
It may have been in development when the DS was announced.
Hmm.
Okay, well, the DS had been out for, what, 2 years before the Wii came out, and the Wii version came out, I think, a year into the system's lifespan, so that means...
Yeah. There was a big gap.
Yeah. Okami would have had to have been over 3 years by the time.
It was a port to the Wii. It was out on PS2 for quite a while before it was
played.
Right. I know it was a port, but the 3 years seems a pretty big gap to port something.
And they
you know, somebody will comment. Yeah, somebody will comment and tell us whether we're right or wrong.
I could look it up, but I'm too lazy and we still got stuff to talk about.
Yeah.
One more thing that I want to mention with trailer. The ODST trailer that we mentioned last week got an extended cut to go from 1 minute 30 to 2 minutes 30.
Ooh.
It has an additional 20 seconds during the opening funeral scene, which sets up the main character as, I believe, a relative of the initial deceased. And then it has 40 seconds of battle at the end that really... could have been cut. To me, as a film editor, it's like, wow, this is longer than it needs to be now. Because
that's
the
why
original,
it's an extended cut, not a director's
cut. Because the original minute 30 did a really good job of keeping tight pacing and telling the story that it needed to. A really good story within a minute and 30 seconds.
Yeah.
You know, I just watched the Red versus Blue trailers on the website, so that satisfied me.
Yeah, Red versus Blue, I saw the new ODST one. That was funny. Yeah. That was funny.
For those of you who don't know what Red vs. Blue is...
Rachel talked about it the first episode.
Yeah, which
we did.
Nobody, by the way.
And he said that. He said the exact same thing.
Oh, I did?
Yes.
Yeah. That's
to those who don't know Red vs. Blue, which is nobody.
Yeah.
Well, I keep on running into people who know what it is, so, alright, I guess we already talked about it. I wasn't here for it, so just go back and look at episode one.
Watch more episodes. Listen to
watch.
It.
Right. Yes.
Shut up.
Just stare at the little scrolling bar on your computer as it plays.
Claw, what else you got for us?
Well, Toys R Us rolls out National Game Trade-In Program, Classic Games Accepted. Now, as...
I saw that, too.
Yeah, as a used game store, I figured you guys might be interested in this. Basically... in the past couple of months, a lot of stores have picked up on GameStop's, you know, game trading.
Walmart.
Yeah, Walmart, Best Buy, and now Toys R Us. And apparently Toys R Us will go back and accept games as far back as the Intellivision.
I actually knew about this, like, 3 months ago.
Yeah, there was rumors going on around this, so.
There's a customer that came in here one day, and this lady said, she's like, you know, Toys R Us is taking games? And I'm like, yeah, I heard that they were starting it, and they're like, no, it's going nationwide, and they take all games. I'm like, how do you know that? She's like, well, my cousin is a district manager, regional,
yeah, something like that.
And, yeah, she told me that, and I was like, there's no way that they're going to be taking, like, NES games and stuff.
Yeah, but they're going to give you, like, probably 10 cents for them, and they're only doing it for store credit.
Yeah.
And then what they're supposedly doing is, sending them someplace to be refurbished and then resold in another outlet, which makes me wonder what the other outlet is. I'm guessing eBay.
I'm guessing Games R Us.
Is there a Games R Us?
No, but I bet you they'll make one just if they get enough copies of stuff, they'll make one.
Babies
R Us.
If they are selling classic games, I'd be interested in checking out a Games R Us. Because that's why I shop here, is because you guys have the NES, Super NES.
I don't think that it's going to be successful. And the reason is that Toys R Us you know, when we see a place that tries to do video games as well as other stuff, it's not doing as well with video games. So I'm talking about mind games.
Yep.
They do tabletop RPGs, you know, D&D, they do Magic the Gathering, and they also do video games, and they're not as good with video games. They don't give appropriate trade-in credit, they don't
get appropriate prices. Very well.
Yeah. The guy looks at it, oh, this was a good game, I'm going to put $80 on it. You come here and get it for 15.
Yeah. Then that tends to be the whole
to anyone who works at Mind Games, I'm sorry. I mean, nothing personal. I'm just saying what our customers have said when they come in here.
Yeah.
Disclaimer?
Okay. We do get a lot of feedback from customers, so...
Oh my god, this place is so much better than Mind Games.
Yeah, I hear that weekly, or probably closer to daily, but... yeah.
I don't even know what Mind Games is.
It's a store right up the road.
Oh.
Yeah. It's a everything store like Andrew had.
Yeah.
Yeah, when stores tend to try to do like all different types of things, mm-hmm. like Toys R Us does everything from, you know, clothes to toys. Yeah.
And just selling new games takes very little effort.
Yeah, no. Yeah, set them on the shelf and just wait.
but to do a really fully integrated used game thing takes a lot of effort, needs a lot of specialization.
Yep.
And I don't think that Toys R Us is going to put in all the effort that's needed for that, because they'll need to essentially make a whole new branch. They'll need to make Games R Us in order to do that.
Yep.
And I don't think that they're willing to really go through with that.
Yeah, and they'd have to train people, because you can't just, well, I know that they're going to have a computer that you just scan it, whatever, but a lot of these older games, think N64, Sega, NES, none of them have a barcode, so at some point, somebody has to type it into a computer and then know the difference between the 14 different versions of Pac-Man on the NES, you know?
Well, heck, some games, like I know Star Fox 64 had two different versions, mm-hmm. you know, with like bug fixes and stuff like that, so then you gotta get into the little micro versions.
Yeah, at that on things like that, they're probably not gonna make a difference. But there's like one Pac-Man that's worth like $5, and there's one that's worth like $45. Yeah. So
are they gonna give you more for a Zelda gold cartridge than a gray cartridge?
Yeah,
that sort of thing.
Are they gonna factor in condition?
And again, here's the thing that they're not going to get a lot of people doing it with is that they're only doing store credit.
Yeah.
While it would be nice to train for store credit and get like a Nerf gun or something, or you know, something completely unrelated
Nerf
to
sword.
Games. Something completely unrelated to the game, so many people, when they're trading stuff for cash, is because, oh, I need to put gas in my car.
Yeah.
Or I need to make rent. You know? And store credit at Toys R Us doesn't help you make rent.
Out of 10 times, somebody's...
It helps you make trouble.
Yeah.
It helps you make not being able to pay rent worthwhile, because you have toys to play with.
Yeah, 9 out of 10 times when somebody trades in a game, they're either looking for cash to put towards, like, you know, food and stuff,
mm-hmm.
or they're going for newer games.
Yeah.
And Toys R Us, depending on what their pricing looks like, and if they do the in-house sales, if they don't have a Games R Us or something like that, then they probably won't get that many people trading up. Especially if I want to see what they get for like brand new games, you know, because that's kind of where you set the bar.
Yeah.
What do they do for brand new games? What do they do for games that are like a year old?
Yeah.
You know?
And then I mean, I'm even curious to see what they do with the older games,
mm-hmm.
and what their
quarter
pricing
dime.
Looks like.
What are they doing?
Yep. And do manuals count? You know, things like that.
Yeah, I've got Donkey Kong for the ColecoVision. What will they give me for that?
Like 80 cents,
good laugh.
Maybe. Yeah, good laugh, probably.
Hey, it was the system-selling game.
Yeah.
Back in 1982.
Sticky, you got anything else?
I played a little Team Fortress 2, which is amazing. I love I love cartoon shooters, the cartoony-looking shooters.
Yeah.
I love Team Fortress, the way that they do everything, the voices.
Oh, such a fan. I was such a fan of TFC.
Yeah, me too.
So.
Yep. Team Fortress 2 is good. It On the 360, it sucks. You can't find anybody to play with, and they didn't support it.
Yeah.
On the PC, they've changed it, so, like, they've almost got this MMO feel to it now.
Almost, yeah.
So when you, like, shoot a guy, something random will drop. Like, you can get a halo over your hat, or...
Well, you get the halo for not being someone who was cheating to get the hats in the first place.
Yeah, yeah. But, it was a lot of fun.
A big stink. I don't really feel like talking about, because it's too stupid. Stupider even than... Courtney Love shit. So.
Yeah. I got, I was a little upset one of my games. I got stabbed probably 15 times by spies. Just, I couldn't walk anywhere without getting hit in the back by a spy.
There's those fun ones where everyone's playing a spy or everyone's sniping you. Or...
Mm-hmm.
Let's see, I've got one more thing to mention. It's sort of old news. It was actually from the middle of August, but I just found out about it, and it's pretty fascinating. EVE Online developers banned a ton of illegal farming accounts. They banned 6,200 accounts. And then, because EVE Online is the domain of nerds, they made graphs to show the difference before and after. There was that many players gone, it was a 2% reduction of the player base. It was a 30% reduction of CPU load.
Really?
All those people that, you know, were actively farming and getting, you know, like building up, you know, accounts to sell and stuff like that. Yeah, 30%. It's like they actually showed the CPU drop. They made a ton of other graphs, and it was actually a pretty fascinating read. I didn't print up a whole lot about it, but check out the EVE Online developers blog August 18th.
Oh, I did have one more thing I wanted to mention real quick. League of Legends, I mentioned it, and it's the NDA's open.
Oh, yes, yes, yes.
It's loosened. So
yeah, if we don't post pictures or video, we're good. So go ahead and talk about that. We got a couple minutes left.
It's like an arena-style game. There's three lanes. You only control one hero, and the whole time there's NPCs, like, pushing against each other during these lanes, and your hero's job is to help your NPCs push.
Mm-hmm.
You only control one guy. You get, like, four skills, three regular ones, and some ultimate that you get, like, you know, crazy long cooldowns for.
Yeah.
It's an arena battler, which is... They made up, like, their own... name for it, like MOBAR or something like that. MOPAR, I don't know, something
Fubar.
About yeah. And the best part about this game is that they just got $9 million from an investing firm to help produce this game, and the way that they're marketing it, or they're pricing it, is that it's free. The game is going to be free to play, but based on microtransactions.
See, I like that.
I know what I can see.
Is it going to be game-changing, microtransactions?
Yes, it does change your hero skills, but I'm looking at it, like, and they give you things like 16 health, like, plus 16 health for, like, tier 3 rune, which would probably be, like, $3, say. And 16 health on a guy that has 3,000 is not that much.
The thing with microtransactions in a game like that is that in order to sell the microtransactions, they need to be effective enough to do something. And yet that usually means changing the game.
Yeah, without breaking the game.
So nobody's going to spend $3 to get 16 health if you have over like 3,000 already.
But it's the way China's doing their games right now, and it's really working. Like, it's the Chinese business model for gaming, and it...
Yeah, we're not going to get into Chinese gaming because we could do a whole show on that.
Have that much spare time.
Right. But it's...
Apparently the Chinese do.
That's what I'm saying, is that Americans don't have that much spare time to just do gaming like that.
Can either of you really name one other full-size game like that that does that pricing scheme?
We were talking about a few episodes ago where I mentioned Icarium, which does microtransactions.
I'm trying to think, because I know there are other games...
That's a browser-based game.
It is, but I mean, I know that there's other games that do the...
Yeah.
See, I think... I'm, you know, a big Rock Band player. I think I like that model of not necessarily giving the game away for free, because, you know, they wouldn't... It's still EA. They still wouldn't do that. But, right. You know, don't you think these music games should do something similar to that? Like, release a game with the basic...
With the basic set list, and then make you pay for more content. Oh, wait.
But no. Sell the game for a budget price. You know, they're already making money off of the extra songs, the extra content, and everything. Sell... Rock Band 3 for $30-$40.
And then it have, like, half the starting set list.
Yeah.
The trouble with that is that there are people that don't have Xbox Live, don't have PSN, you know, and that want to have a good set list right out of the box.
And that's why they sell the track packs for $20 each already.
Yeah, but those track packs always have crap on them.
They usually do, yeah.
Well, so do the base set lists.
Yeah. Oh, I don't know. Some of them are alright. They're ranged. But
anyway,
we're running out of time.
Yeah, so, we're kind of grasping at straws at this point anyway.
Did you have one last thing you wanted to say?
I have nothing left to say to you. Either of you.
Be that way.
Well...
All right.
You too.
Well, reminder again, just that the next podcast is going to be a day late, and then the podcast after that will not exist. So, if you have a content on any... a comment on anything in the podcast today, leave us an email, gamenutspodcast@gmail.com. Drop us a note at the blog, gamenutspodcast.blogspot.com. This is Boater signing off.
Sticky out.
And Fear the Claws saying again, go to iTunes, look us up, and leave us a review. Get us up there on the chart.